It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hey, it's Ken Bergen here from Hospo Reset, and today we're talking loyalty and data and email and obviously all about customers and making them happy, keeping them coming back and back and back. And my guest today is Sarah Franklin from Impact Data, and she is a real wizard with all these topics. And yeah, she kind of lives and breathes customer retention and customer communication. So really happy to have go along today. Hey, Sarah. Hey.
Hello. Thank you. It's lovely. It's always lovely to chat to you, Ken. I learn as much, hopefully, as the people who listen to us chatting do.
Well, I find that's a real pleasure, actually, with these podcasts. I'm kind of, wow, I didn't know that, you know, I'm learning that stuff. So
let's see
what we find. So I mentioned loyalty as one of the things we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you a while back, and you sometimes are kind of saying to customers who are coming along, hang on, no loyalty, not just yet. Why is that? What's wrong with loyalty?
Look, loyalty in of itself is a fantastic tool to engage customers, but it's a really expensive thing to unwind if you don't have a plan to execute it. And what I find with lots of clients is they think that loyalty is the be-all and end-all, and it's actually not, because loyalty is a function of many things, and the most important one is customer engagement, because your job really as a marketer or a business owner or a hospitality professional is to get that customer back. We know at Impact Data that up to 80% of customers never return a second time to a business.
That's just kind of standard.
That's just
business. Not that you did anything wrong.
That's just how people react. Yeah.
Okay, most people are one-offs. It's a very high figure, isn't it?
It's a really high figure. And I'm sure most business owners would be quite disturbed saying, oh, that's not the case. But actually the data shows us that it is. And the reason is usually because venues don't ask them back. And we use this analogy all the time, is how you get a second date is you ask for a second date. And I'm not sure that loyalty, because loyalty is like we're married. I'm not sure that we're ready to be married.
Okay. We haven't had a second date yet.
So I really think the place to start is gather your data. And I promise you, there are hidden gems in your data that you don't know about. We use reservation data, guest Wi-Fi data, online ordering, order at table, point of sale, you know, all of these data sources. And when you pull them together, you can start to see who your best customers are. And then you can start to engage them more effectively. Tell them what they want to hear about your business. And, of course, connect with the ones who aren't coming as often. That's your start point. That's customer engagement sort of 101. And it's hard to do sometimes if you've got a number of systems that aren't talking to each other. And data's
about a typical, say, a cafe that's fairly busy. They've got maybe Counter or Stripe. What else they got?
Well, they probably have Facebook. They're probably talking to people on Facebook or Instagram, so they're potentially collecting details there. They've got a website. They've definitely, hopefully, got a sign-up page
there.
There's
some inquiries coming in.
Yep. They've got maybe function booking inquiries, things like that. They might have a reservation partner, you know, like OpenTable or Quandu or NowBookIt or one of those guys. They could be using, you know, if they're a really busy cafe and they really want to make money, they should be thinking about online ordering or order at table. They might even have a Shopify website where they're selling their jams and their produce
and things.
As Christmas presents, right? All of those sources are incredibly valuable pieces of data about not just who is coming, but how much they're spending, what their frequency is, how valuable they are in relation to who you think.
And thinking about what you mentioned, I mean, some of these things we've had for years, and others might be just like a COVID, you know, like lots more online ordering or those sorts of things.
Look, I am a massive believer in online ordering and order at table data, because for many venues, it's the first time they could connect a patron and their details to what they were purchasing. You know, a cafe is a really good example, Ken, because often, you know, the barista knows my coffee. You know, I can go in and Ruby knows exactly that I'm having a cappuccino at Alpha in Yarraville. But, and they have a loyalty card, so they do know who I am. But they wouldn't necessarily know, the business owner wouldn't necessarily know how much I spend or how valuable mm-hmm. I am or anything like that. And there would be a huge number of customers that were hidden to them because they're not using loyalty. They just know that when Ken comes in, he has a magic, you know, and they need to make it extra hot. But they wouldn't necessarily know that actually when he comes in on a Sunday, he brings his family and you have, mm-hmm. you know, breakfast for six people because yeah. it's a different shift. You know, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I get a little bit cynical about the old, oh, you know, the barista knows the coffee, you know, that's the only, that's all the marketing we need.
Oh, no. Like,
yeah, maybe she does, but then, yeah. you know, she's left.
Well, that's the other risk. And also, you know, is she upselling you to breakfast on Sunday with the family? Probably not. So I think, or does she know when it's your birthday? And, you know, that you probably would give you a free coffee because that actually, you know, creates a lovely loyalty relationship.
So I usually think of these as kind of silos as a lot, because a lot of, especially like point of sales, you know, they're very picky about who they allow integrations with. Yeah. And, you know, Facebook is kind of famously kind of like invasive, but also protective of its own data. So yeah. how do we, you're saying that actually when we look around, you know, there's, you know, maybe a dozen different places we could actually pull data, but that sounds like a very tedious spreadsheet job.
Oh my goodness. You really wouldn't want to do it yourself. So we've spent the last 15 years building a platform that extracts data and normalizes it and pushes it into our application, which is called Talkbox, because, oh my goodness, uploading data from multiple sources is mad. And I mean, even it just creates duplicates, all of that sort of stuff. Don't do it. Every business owner I know doesn't have enough hours in the day. Why would they suddenly become a data expert and an analyst when there are much better tools out there to help them? So the other thing I think is really important to think about is when you're bringing on a new supplier into your business, you need to consider how does it fit from a data perspective with all of the other tools. You know, you mentioned silos, Ken. Everyone makes decisions, you know, particularly maybe you've got a reasonable sized business, say you've got a restaurant. You got a front of house manager who's really passionate about the reservation platform they want to use, but it doesn't integrate to your point of sale system. So you've got two tickets, you know, like, or you want to use one of the online ordering partners. Brilliant. Okay. They're fantastic for driving, you know, incremental business. But if that's another app that your kitchen has to manage because it's not coming out on your same dockets, you've really got to start to think about that because the proliferation can cost you time and money. And
I think people in, you know, 2020 when suddenly everyone frantically had to go online, dived in, and they didn't know the questions to ask. You know, it's like buying a car or a product. You sort of have a fair few ideas, or a friend will advise you always ask these questions. We just didn't know. And this... So you're saying one of the questions is, you know, the availability of the data and how easily we can extract it or integrate it with other.
And will they do it for you? Will they push it into the other systems that you have? And the other question that is really important.
And how often do you find these services that won't? Are they most less, of them will or?
Less now than, you know, even a year ago. The reality is everyone understands they're part of a daisy chain of data across a venue. And really, if you won't play nicely with the people upstream and downstream of you, then you're sort of picking in the middle a little bit, making life difficult for that hospitality business. So we are seeing a much higher level of cooperation and data sharing and allowing a business to push data through multiple sources, whether it's their business intelligence, their Xero accounting, or their marketing application. But the other really important question, which I urge every business owner to ask, is who owns the data? You know, we saw at the beginning of COVID, everyone jumped onto Uber. Brilliant, fantastic, you all needed it. But you don't own that customer and you don't own the rights to that customer, which is fine. It's understandable. But if you sign up to a reservation platform or a point of sale or whatever it is, who owns that customer? Do you own them? How are they opted into marketing for you? And how do you extract that data so that you can talk to them? Because it might make a very different decision. You might make a very different decision based on the answers to that. So, you know, if you're a new business,
Yeah. So given that, you know, Uber Eats number one, DoorDash is sort of streaked up to number two.
Getting there.
And I mean, actually from a recent webinar and a podcast that I did, talking to people, there's been a kind of return to these, because now that people realize you can actually charge more, and oh my God, managing a team of drivers is just terrible.
Yeah.
So we're going to hand it over. So it's not like we're going to just say, no, we're going to not use them. They're kind of, but what do we do then if we are going to use them? We know they're going to use our data for their marketing purposes.
Yeah.
But we still want the data as well, don't we?
We do. And look, I think you are genuinely going to challenge to get the data out of an Uber. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is be in control of the customers that you own. So, you know, one of the things that has emerged this year and is about to really start.
So the customers that I own who also use Uber Eats for delivery?
Well, customers that potentially have come to you through another path. Visited on your website, you know, they've made a booking, any of that sort of stuff, then really work them hard and show them all of the love.
Uh-huh.
Because the other really important thing to think about, Ken, is you're not in control of where Uber puts you in the list. You know, tonight's Wednesday in Melbourne, I might decide to go to takeaway. If I am the local pizza shop, Red Tomato, I'm not in control of where I come up in the list.
Sure.
So I can't control my inventory. I can't, I've got fixed costs. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. I've got, I've got food that's sitting in the fridge and I've got labor costs that I need to open the business.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't control the demand, well, then I'm kind of just guessing. So that's why you need to own some of your customers.
Okay, so, and I'm thinking back to another guest we had on a webinar in the past who just does a brilliant job of converting people who come through, the main delivery platforms into ordering through her platform because you get a 10% discount if you do, which is pretty useful. But she also runs her own delivery team as well. And there's also now, I think it's Uber Direct or Delivery. There's ways around it. Yeah. Okay.
There is. But what we're seeing, one of the big changes that's happening in social media and, website is the third party cookies. So what it basically means is it's going to be a little bit more challenging for you to connect with customers in your socials unless you basically pay for every post.
Right. Okay. This is with Apple's changes.
Yeah. That's part of it.
Yeah.
All of these things are basically, they're trying to, what all of these platforms are trying to do is stop people being disengaged with their platform because they're getting shown too much stuff they're not interested in.
Yeah,
so what has happened happily for our business is a massive resurgence in the importance of email and SMS.
Because you own
that customer. And if you have respect for that, coming back to the dating analogy, which is one of my favorites, if you have respect for that relationship and you treat it well,
right,
then customers will open your email.
So no sending random texts at midnight.
Oh, please don't.
First date.
No.
That's not respect.
But a planned approach. And it's really interesting because on our platform, the vast majority of communications go out a one-to-one rather than just I'm telling everyone my story.
Yeah.
Because of that, engagement rates have increased because when I get a communication from a brand, I know that it's relevant to me because I've visited in the last X days, so you're asking me for feedback, or I haven't been in for a while, so you might incentivize my next visit, or you might remind me how beautiful the steak is by sending me a gorgeous picture. Because I haven't been in for a while and, the steak special is new to the menu. So all of those things start to honour the relationship. Now, I get it. It's hard. It's hard to do that sort of stuff for yourself. So try and work with partners, whether it's an agency who does it for you or a partner like ourselves who does all the automations. Really think about how much time you can put into your customer engagement strategy.
Yeah, and I think people get a bit – the old perfection is the enemy of progress. They want, all these kind of really cool promotions, like you mentioned, the new steak or the haven't seen you in 2 months.
Yeah.
All that stuff sounds cool. But actually to do that kind of manually is, almost impossible to do it by yourself.
It really is, yeah. Mm-hmm. You'd have to be pulling data from many sources. You'd actually have to know how to probably create a pivot table. There's a lot of tools that you'd need to do when – there's plenty of applications, partners out there that can do it for you and do it well.
I guess, like I said before, the Uber Eats, DoorDash are not going away, maybe even a bit stronger, but let's just make it a challenge for everyone who does get a delivery that way. There's something goes into the bag
that'll get
them onto our list another way around.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's really important. I recently did some content with one of our partners, which is Res Diary, and we were talking about every journey starts with Google, right? We know that. Every journey. Yeah. And that means where I'm getting my pizza as well. So start with where your customer starts. Where is the data? What do you look like on Google? Has it got some beautiful images? Is your website up to date? Are your opening hours correct? All of that
Google
sort of
my
stuff.
Business is just the number one, two, or three.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. If you're serious about business, you have to be serious about how you look on Google in Australia anyway, because it's, you know, 70 to 80% of all search. And so start there, because that's as important as your shop front. You know, you don't leave your windows dirty and, you know, and rubbish out the front because that's not inviting. Well, think of Google My Business is exactly the same thing. It's your shop
front. Might be another podcast discussion just about that. I've just actually been on a webinar which was all about that. It was like in a different context, not just hospitality, but these people who are kind of closely connected with Google, they're actually amazed at how powerful it is. Even more powerful in Australia, and how much take up there is as well. So,
my goodness, absolutely, and make it easy. You know, I've seen some partners that we work with who have integrated menus into Google. So if I, you know, particularly if I'm traveling to a new place, you know, I'm heading to Sydney. Hopefully, I'll see you next week. And if I'm around and I'm in North Sydney and I've just got to quickly grab a sandwich or grab a coffee, I'm going to type coffee near me, and you know what comes up. If it's visual and I can quickly order it, oh my goodness, that's a much better experience than me, you know, going, particularly if you've got lots of reviews. That's the other thing we say is, you know, user generated reviews are the oil of SEO. Ask for feedback. It's a gift and use it.
and interesting, I think people are actually, you know, I remember a few years back you would, at seminars and things like that, people would be in an absolute, you know, emotional state about they'd had one knife in the back. Well, it felt like a knife in the back, a review. Because we were just getting used to the idea of reviews, and people still do snaky reviews. But once you've got 800 reviews, three or four snaky reviews, kind of lost lost in the bushes, really.
Absolutely.
I think everyone's toughening up around that.
I think so. And I think consumers also are a little bit discerning, you know, about the quality of reviews as well. So, you know, asking your best customers for a review. We have one of our partners that's in the quick serve sort of industry. Every 10th visit, they ask for feedback. And, you know, that's a really good time, because there's a pretty good chance I'm going to give you a good review because I've visited 10 times.
Or they send them a message, you mean?
They send them an email, and then if they respond, they give them, I think it's a free chips. You know, it's a great promotion. Everybody wins. The consumer feels valued because they've been asked for their feedback about a brand that they clearly have a connection to, and they've been rewarded for doing the work.
So now, you mentioned before that emails make a bit of a resurgence. I don't think it's kind of ever really gone away. I remember hearing someone describe it as the diesel engine of marketing, which was I like that. It's sort of it's not environmentally friendly, but we know what they're talking about. Yes. It's kind of strong and reliable. Talk to me about email versus SMS. When I would use one rather than the other.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
What messages would I use on one and or the other?
The first thing I would say about email is don't write bad emails. Email gets a bad name because people write terrible emails. And one of the things we talk to our clients about is, I've given you permission to talk to me in my private space, which is either on my phone or on my computer. So respect it. Do it with, you know, sometimes a bit of humor if that's relevant to your brand, but you know, this is a value exchange.
I'm following the dating analogy. No bad pictures, thanks.
Exactly. Oh my goodness, no. Once I've got an analogy again, I run with it. But in all seriousness, I've given you something that is important to me, which is my contact details. So you need to respect that and honor it. So don't send me stupid emails. I really get frustrated with a lot of online brands, and I'm a lover of online purchasing, and I purchase wide and varied things. But they send me 7 emails before my first item's arrived. I don't know if I want to buy the next item. Yeah, I don't know if it's any good. You know, I don't know if you're going to deliver on the promise of that of our first date.
How often is too often?
Yeah. But I think
is once a week too often, or
it depends on the engagement with the brand. I think for some brands, you can almost get away with, you know, a couple of times a week if I'm really highly engaged. But honestly, in food, how often do I really want to hear from your brand? You know, let's be honest.
I know my Amazon, I get emails probably 3 or 4 times a week, but I use Amazon and they're always kind of, they're kind of relevant. Yep. And interestingly, Kmart, you know, does really interesting emails, always vary, but they'll do 4 and 5 a week.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too much, but I'm just kind of, I'm so intrigued. I've only been kind of on their list for a month or two. I'm so intrigued by the variety and the quality of the way they do it.
That's the point. You nailed it right there, Ken. It's the variety. If you are saying the same thing over and over again, people are going to turn off really, really quickly. If you have trained me that on Thursday at 5 p.m. you're going to send me an offer, you know what? Am I going to shop any other time? Probably not. Mm. So you've got to change it up. And that's where having potentially an agency partner can be great, where they can build out a content strategy for you. But a couple of things that we really focus on. Always welcome. Welcome and ask for feedback. How was your visit? Because first impressions count. You know, your best chance to get a second visit is understand how good the first. Always send a welcome message. Acknowledge that they've given you this detail. There's nothing worse than that. If you don't have a date of birth,
and should that be within 24 hours or within 6 hours or two hours of the visit?
It's like when you go home after that first date. If they send you a text message within 2 hours, that might be a little bit much. I'd probably go the next day. When I talk about this, everyone can put themselves in the mind of dating, and then they're like, I need to think about my brand like that. It makes it a bit more relevant. So, look, the next communication that I think is really important, and sometimes the welcome message might be a series, because one of the things we've been building out is our Journeys feature, where we're really focused on what we call the menu explorer. So we want to take you through the menu, because quite often when you go maybe to a cafe or a quick, you know, fast casual kind of place, you might stick with the burger and you never explore the salads or the desserts or, you know, all of that sort of fun stuff. So maybe over the next month, I might send you a couple of communications with an offer to get you, to entice you to try some of the rest of my menu. So that's a really fun one where a welcome communication can be spread out over a period of time. Everyone loves a birthday message. And if you're clever as a consumer, here's a hot tip for you. Don't use your real birth date in all your communications, because there's only so many free burgers and drinks I can eat on my birthday.
Right.
Spread them out.
Okay. Have it a month before, a month after. Yeah.
Okay. How good's that? Have a few birthdays up your sleeve. But in all seriousness, I know that's a bit cheeky. If a lot of the data that you would be working with as a hospitality venue, you may not capture date of birth. You know, if I make a booking for dinner for us next week, Ken, I don't have to give them my date of birth. Yeah. So one of the things you might want to go back and ask for date of birth, because sending a birthday message is
really bad. I've had a few like that where it's sort of sometime later they say, oh, we haven't got your, we'd love to have you, you know, send you something on your birthday. And it kind of feels right then rather than filling out a long list of questions.
Absolutely. You know, some things might, say you've got a sports bar, for example, you might also ask, you know, me, who do I barrack for? Because then, you know, that information can be really relevant. If I know, you know, that I'm an AFLW supporter and the Pies are playing, well, fantastic. Yeah. I can target Sarah in a communication because I've got Carlton and Collingwood on the big screen and you might want to come and watch it in the bar. Right. So, you know, a couple of things, but not too many things. When, you know, we're not doing filling out the eHarmony bio here. We're just, you know, a little bit of stuff that's relevant to the relationship.
So when would I text? This has been email. Would I text the welcome message, or is it not the time for text?
I what I use text for is attention and action. So if I really want to get your attention, then that's when I use SMS. So if I've got a really hot,
but
so
I
for example,
get your attention on email, don't you? Or is this a more urgent message?
Yeah, it's more urgent. The reason that email isn't as urgent is because in hospitality, most consumers are going to give you their Gmail or their Hotmail. They're not going to potentially give you that email they're looking at every single day.
Right. Okay.
So we just have to be, you know, cognizant of that. So if you've got a really hot, say, You've the restaurant manager's come in and looked at the bookings and gone, oh dear, we're in strife here, kids. You know, we've only got 50% of covers booked tonight, and you know, it's a Tuesday, we don't get a lot of walk-ins, but I've got some lobster that I need to move. Right? That's when you send an SMS. You send it straight away and you say, I've got a lobster special going tonight, book now. Mm-hmm. Really strong calls to action in SMS. Don't be wishy-washy about SMS. Give them a reason to click something.
Okay, and it's a strong bribe or offer or something.
Yeah, or a time-based thing. It's got to be timely. And the other really cool thing that we do a lot with SMS is send an email via SMS. So if I don't want to tell you, because you're my best customer, that we're open for Christmas bookings now. But you know what? I want to tell you first, Ken, because you're a VIP. So I'm going to text you, but I'm actually going to put a link to the email because I want you to see how beautiful the turkey looks. You know, so we have that ability to do both, which I think.
So it's a very short text message with a link.
Yeah. Yeah. Get them engaged and involved, right? But particularly, let's be honest, we eat with our eyes, right? Whether it or, you know, drink. So I want to create that visual element to the urgency that I've created with the SMS.
Yeah. Okay.
The other really good way that we see SMS used is reminders. So if you've sent out an offer, a promotion, you know, it's only valid for 14 days or 7 days or whatever, and they haven't redeemed it. We did this with a pub in Sydney, actually. Had a fantastic result when they sent an SMS reminder with 3 days to go. Everyone went, oh, goodness, I've forgotten, and bomb. The offer had a huge uplift in take-up. Mm-hmm. So SMS is really valuable in that regard.
Yeah, interesting. I can see the distinction too. Now, you mentioned this term customer journey, which is kind of like a high-level marketing agency.
Yes, it is.
Speak. But what do you mean here? Obviously, I mean, we start on the journey, the first visit. That's our kind of opening. What do you recommend?
What is it?
What's appropriate? How do we apply this for the cafe on the corner?
I would suggest that customer journeys, each of us as consumers are on a number of them at any one point. We just may not know about it because what they are is trying to get you through a funnel to an action. So in the business to business environment, you know, what is really common, for example, is we put out a white paper about something about marketing. And Ken says, oh, that seems really interesting. I might read that. So in order to receive that white paper, you have to give some details, right? Then what's going to happen is you're going to go through a series of actions, and at the end of the day, they want to make a sale to you. So what they might be doing is sending you an email to get a little bit of qualification about what business you're in. Then they might send a follow-up, invite you to a webinar, you know, whatever it is. And you're basically going through a funnel to try and get you to that action. And that's effectively
sequence just based on the fact that I clicked on a link. Where
that you did something.
Everyone else who didn't click on it is not going to be taken down that
path. Well, they'd be going down a different path potentially.
Right.
So
a customer journey. There's a did not click path, which might have to bribe them or entice them a little more strongly. Yeah.
And so how I like to explain it is often you'll do communications that are just date triggered. You know, it's Ken's birthday, so let's send him a communication.
Yeah.
Sarah hasn't been in for 60 days.
Yeah,
and it's pretty straightforward, right? It's just calculating the last time you visited, or you know, it's linked to a date. But when you have a customer journey, it's the intersection of that behaviour with the business, but also the engagement with the communication. I.e., didn't open the email. Let's prompt them with an SMS.
Okay.
Because
the interaction with the data you've already got handled through your POS integrations or the different things that feed into you. But this is a different one. It's like how I actually interacted or didn't.
With the communication. Yeah. So it's the two layers because sometimes you don't open the communication, but your visit happy days, because let's be honest, that's what we want. we want you back on premise. But other times it might be more important that if you didn't interact with that communication and you didn't visit, we try a different channel, or we try a different subject line, or we try a different offer. So, you know, it allows you to
give me an example of, say, how a pub might be using
customer
journey thing. What's been working?
It's really early days in this as a concept, I suppose, from our perspective. But one of the things that we do see is, if you've got a membership program, say your pub might have a loyalty, or, you know, so lots of pubs and clubs would do that, and you've got a renewal date, or even it's just an anniversary date. Say you're a member of the golf club, right? And we want to get you through the renewal process. We want to send you an early bird offer. So the first thing we do is calculate when you're due for renewal, or when it's, you know, coming up to your anniversary, and we want to get you in and say thanks, you know, and redeem and renew your membership early, get a bonus for that. If you don't do that, then we might act again and actually send you another communication and say, hey, don't forget, you're going to miss out on your benefits, you know, and we'll take you through that renewal journey. Now, at any point, if you renew, the journey stops, and that's it. We leave you alone because you did the action. Another example might be, you know, if there's some data, as I mentioned before, like date of birth, that's really important, because I do want to have a birthday club. Mm-hmm. Or I know, for example, that 50th and 60th birthdays, you know, fuel my business, right? So I really want to capture date of birth because they're big function businesses for me. Mm-hmm. So the journey I might really, it's a bit of a get to know you journey. So the first thing would be, you know, ask the customer what their visit was like, maybe incentivize them to get that next visit. Then the third part of the journey might be to ask for date of birth. And then when we know, you know, say 4 months out from their birthday, it might be send them the function pack, invite them in for a drink to see the function room, you know, because at the end of the day, the action I'm trying to get you through is to book a function.
Interesting. I suppose there's a bit of test and measure with a lot of that too, isn't it? Which things?
Correct. Work. What subject line?
Yeah. What's just a bit of learning you've had of things that, you know, people tried that didn't work, and then they tried something different and it worked so much. What didn't work to start with?
Look, what often doesn't work is if it's too complicated and there's too many steps and you've forgotten what your purpose was. Like just start simple. You know, just have one objective that I'm trying to do. I just want a second date. I just want you to visit because you have stopped interacting, or you've stopped visiting. I just want to get you to book a Christmas lunch, you know.
Yes.
Start really simple. Don't overcomplicate your world. And also don't try to fit everything in. Don't try to create a journey that has every interaction you'll ever have with a customer. Just pick that one objective. That's the critical thing.
An interesting article on your website recently about a pub that, you know, they, what was it, 600 odd people on their database who you'd worked out that they hadn't visited for a long time.
Tell
us how that worked.
We do that a lot. We actually, my favourite one, very similar, but was with a fish and chip shop. So we looked, Tuesday, really quiet night, right, in fish and chips. This is in the UK. We have a UK team as well. And we just selected a bunch of customers that hadn't been in for 40 days. And we just sent them an SMS and said, don't cook tonight. Fish and chips, you know, eat our award-winning fish and chips. They spent about £400, and the return on invest and the orders generated was close to £5,000.
Wow. And no bribe. It was just
a bribe,
basically.
Just a reminder. It's Tuesday. And so sometimes, to your earlier point, Ken, you don't have to bribe your customers. You just have to.
Yeah, well, this leads into just talking a bit more about loyalty, because we always think of this elaborate set of rewards and discounts and, you know, frequent flyer points, you know, flights to the moon.
Let's be honest. Start with thinking how many times your best customer would interact with your business. Say you're a cafe, right? And if your best customer lives locally and they get a coffee 5 days a week, right? Can you get anything else out of them? I don't know. Maybe if you've got a lunch, you know, maybe you could sell them a lunch packy, you know, every now and again.
I wish more coffee. you know, gourmet coffee places that sell really good coffee and are proud of their beans did a bit of proper retail promotion of beans.
Oh, exactly.
Boy, what a tragic
yeah,
one.
Missed opportunity. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So yeah. If you give them a coffee card and they get a stamp, are you just giving away 10% of your margin?
Yeah.
Probably. Right. That's loyalty, but it's also, it's not actually helping your business. It might stop them because you're next door to another great cafe, stop them going there. But, and that's legitimate, but is it actually going to change their behavior? Is it going to extract another cent out of them? Is it going to make them more loyal? And more importantly, if they stop visiting and you've given them a paper card, what can you do about it? Nothing, because you don't know who they are. You haven't captured their details.
Yeah, so that's I remember doing a workshop a couple of years ago, pre-COVID, when we did real life workshops. There was a cafe owner. They had a couple of outlets, pretty busy, and they were saying that they just reprinted their stamp card, 10,000 of them, which would have cost very little really in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, holy dooly. The fact that that would be, they probably needed that for 6 months or 12 months, that is so much data that we'll never know anything about.
I think the other thing to think about in that instance, Ken, is what's your liability? If you're going to go and sell your business and the new owner comes in and says, all right, how many coffees am I owing? And then, and you're like, oh, I don't know. Could be thousands of dollars worth of liability that you're sitting on that the new owner is going to be like, well, I'm not going to honour them.
Okay. So really you're saying a loyalty scheme, we do our best to avoid discounts or freebies or...
Well, I think what you need to understand is why you're doing it. And the first thing is, as I said, go back to capturing data and actually figuring out who your best customers are. And can you run an engagement strategy where you don't actually give them any, you know, where you don't necessarily run a loyalty program, but you get more visits out of them by engaging them with things they're interested in.
By doing other things, yeah.
Yeah. Start there. If loyalty is your bag, and don't get me wrong, I think great loyalty programs are great, then the most important thing is just having a loyalty program will not solve your business problems. If you don't have a strategy to engage your customers, to constantly attract new members, to analyze the results, to minimize your liability.
When you come to visit, it's really welcoming and warm and memorable.
And also, isn't the worst experience, and I use this example a lot, and I've become quite belligerent about it, Ken, I have to say. I go into a supermarket where I live and I spend a lot of money there. It's a gourmet supermarket. I don't cook, so I'm that person, right? And I go in there pretty much every week and they say, are you a loyalty member? And I say no. And that's where the conversation ends. Not once in 2.5 years has any staff member asked me to join their loyalty program. So, hence, if you're going
to
do a loyalty...
I had something similar to that this morning, actually. Did you? It was just like, no, I'm not.
No.
And end of conversation.
Now, that's actually creating more harm for your business than not, right? The other example I use is a very famous, good QSR brand, and I've never been asked if I'm a loyalty member. And I know they have a loyalty program because I am a member, but I've never once been asked.
Yeah.
So
I'd say by default, most QSRs don't ask.
Correct.
I think I'm not like a mad takeaway eater, but I do go to different ones just out of curiosity as much.
And
I never get a, am I too old? Am I just not the demographic? Or
no,
it's not you.
It's not you, Ken. It's because if you're going to do a loyalty program, it's got to be in the DNA of your business. It's got to be in your operations. It's got to be in your finance. It's got to be in your marketing. It's got to be in your front of house training. It has got to be on your dashboard. Every single staff member in your business needs to understand their place in making loyalty work.
How many new members we got this last week? And that was a little bit up on the week before.
Whatever. Exactly. And how much is a loyalty customer worth compared to a customer that doesn't use loyalty? You know, all of these metrics are what are important to drive your loyalty program. So simply handing over a membership card and hoping that that changes your business, you're on a hiding to nothing. Okay. It's not going to happen.
Tell me about one of your customers who really drives their loyalty scheme. Their loyalty system really is fantastic.
Yeah. One of my favorite, and they're also one of my favorites when it comes to doing great SMSs, Yochi, frozen yogurt business. Every single transaction.
Y-O-C-H-I, is it?
Yes. Every single transaction, they ask if you're a loyalty member. Every staff member, every time, right? Okay. First, that's winning first.
Yeah.
The second one is they're starting to reward their best customers, to incentivize them. But my favorite thing that they do, they're frozen.
So when I go in and buy something when I am a member, do I show the app or I
a card, just a card in their case, I think. And if you're not a member, they've got a great process to get, you know, to invite you, and they know what their pitch is.
Okay.
Why should you become a member? Because every 10th yogurt is free, right?
Uh-huh.
So they know that. They've got that down pat, right? It's in their DNA. It's embedded in their operations.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they do is when it's cold. No one eats frozen yogurts when it's cold. So when they know it's going to be freezing cold, they send a beautiful email with, you know, the hot chocolate sauce you can put on your yogurt and all of that sort of stuff. And you go, oh, you know what? It might be cold.
Not that bad after all.
But it's not exactly.
So, that's a big challenge in North America with ice and snow for ice cream shops.
Exactly. Yeah. But they've thought about this.
Uh-huh.
They have the data to engage their customers. They've got these templates all ready to go so they can trigger a communication straight away.
They need to get on their list for sure.
So that's one of my favourites because
they offering, you said, one for 10?
Yeah. Every 10th visit, you get a free yogurt.
That's kind of, it's not that generous, but it's you know, it's not.
It is.
It's not like they're not swamping us with rewards, are they?
But it's pretty good because the average value of a yogurt is probably more than a coffee, you know. In that respect, it is pretty good. Mm. You know, they know their customer. The funny thing about their brand is it's very much a meeting place. People go on dates to go and have a frozen yogurt now.
Uh-huh. Bringing back Melbourne to the thing. I haven't sort of noticed them. Maybe I'm
coming to Bondi. It's opening in Bondi really soon, so you'll have to go and sign up.
Right.
Yeah, And what they've done some fun cross promotions with other, I think it was with Oreo or, you know, so stuff like that. So coming back to your earlier point, they've got content to talk to their customers about, you know, and they use it. And that's another thing you have to think about. So if you have someone in your team that maybe is doing some of your social media or things like that, those photos they're taking.
Yeah. So let's talk about the intersection of text, SMS, which is kind of seen as, you know, the old way, social media, the new, but I mean, we use both.
Yep.
How can we use this email list to energize our social media and make those messages more relevant?
Yeah, that's a really good thing. That's a really good question in two ways. The first way is you can use a tool like Zapier, which allows you to actually capture customers who are using your socials and put them into your database, right? So you can actually ask them to become a member and you can use these connection tools to pull them into your database.
So on my Facebook page, I could say join and every 10th yogurt's free.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the first one. So they can become part of the acquisition strategy, which is really important because you always need to be acquiring new eyeballs, as we say. The second part of it in thinking, say you've sent a communication out about, you know, say you're doing a renovation, right? And this is really important stuff. You're spending a lot of money. I want to tell everyone in the world about it. And you might be telling them on a journey. If you've got an email database, you can look at your audience and say who opened it and who didn't open it. And you can retarget the ones who didn't open it on your socials.
Okay.
Because you can add them as a Facebook audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Specific audience are kind of like not as engaged, and correct. So we'd have a message that was kind of appropriate to that group needs a little bit.
It might be massaged a little, by the time it gets to them over in that channel. Okay. And the other thing is they're not the same. Why I'm engaging in Facebook or Instagram, I might be okay to be interrupted by your brand, but don't. We're not really here to sell.
Good point. Yeah, I don't love ads. Mind you, I did buy some clothing yesterday from an interruption on Facebook.
Correct.
Now, of course, I'm being bombarded with offers.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot of it I find I just either ignore it or I just what are you doing there?
Absolutely. So I think being a little bit more targeted about that is mm-hmm. valuable. The other thing about the socials is that's a really good another place to ask for people to put reviews for you because, you know, Facebook is well optimized in the search engine for Google. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if there's a lot of reviews on Facebook as well, then that's another opportunity for you to capture that person to your business.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, just to wrap up now, I'm thinking about, you know, this whole thing of automation and making, you know, this is not robotics. I'm fascinated by robots that cook and make coffee and all those things.
Well, that's a whole other series.
That's another story, yeah. But just kind of like the automation and setting up clever stuff and running it and watching the numbers and all those sorts of things. What are the shortcuts? How do we get clever stuff happening with the effort?
It's a really good question, and one of the things that we've done is do a lot of thinking. So we have done lots of research into our own customers, and we've figured out what offers work, what promotions drive another visit, and we've combined those two things because in my experience, business owners think they know what drives a consumer, but they often don't because they didn't ask them. Uh-huh. And observing behavior is, you know, it's valuable, but you usually do that one-to-one. You're not sitting over your business watching everyone's behavior, whereas that's what we're doing when we're looking
the
at
real
your data.
Behavior is what was on the docket and, you know, how they paid and what time it was and when the visit happened.
And there's a real bias to recency in that because, that's what happened last night. So that, you know, and that's not necessarily true.
And we can't even remember last week or a month.
Exactly. So consumers, we as business people or marketers, we're the worst people to determine what you actually should do. Let the data do it for you and find a partner that will actually do that because, you know, you don't know what you don't know in that regard and you're not an analyst, you know, so that sort of thing. The other tip I would give business owners, yes, by all means, automate your retention, your welcome, your birthdays, all of that sort of stuff, right? But leave a bit of room for discovery because consumers do change their behavior. So just because I always came to Trivia Night on a Tuesday, what happens if all of a sudden I move, right? And now I've got a partner and we want to go dancing on a Saturday night, but you have dancing, but I've never known about that because you've only ever told me about trivia.
Okay.
Yeah.
So send me something crazy.
Every now and again.
That doesn't fit with my demographic.
Surprise and delight is what I like to call it. I'm a big fan of just interrupting my flow a little bit. Don't assume because something I've done every time is that's all I'm ever going to do.
That defines me. Yeah.
Surprise and delight. But one of the other things.
Surprise and delight, though, isn't it?
Yeah. You can. You know, you might just every quarter. One of the things we do every quarter is we just trigger a communication for our business partners about functions. Because I never know when you're doing a christening, an engagement, or a work function. We don't know when you're in the market for that. And if we don't remind you, you won't remember about us. You'll start your search with Google.
Yeah.
And we've missed the opportunity, even though we've got a great relationship and you might have been to a function at my business before. Yeah. So think about surprise and delight and don't count it as part of the mix, you know, that you can really drive the relationship a little bit further, closer to marriage.
Okay. circling back to that. Okay. Well, I love this conversation. It's really, you've kind of knocked a few myths on the head and, you know, and kind of makes things feel a little bit more accessible as well. And also I think you can be the win in the sales for people who actually are pretty creative. It's just that there's probably a lot of people have. They've got lots of creative ideas and then a month has passed and we haven't actually got round to doing that.
And you said that before, you know, perfection is the enemy of progress, and it really is. Sometimes timeliness is actually much more important, particularly if I've got those lobsters in the fridge I need to get rid of.
I think of that around, to me, July is when a smart operator with function spaces should be starting to promote Christmas.
Absolutely.
And it's not till September. It's just like.
Yeah. But by then I'm on the hook because I've come in, I've had maybe a free coffee, I've checked out the function room, I might have been invited to a VIP event where I got to sample the food that's on offer for our parties and events, you know, things like that. I see that in some clubs, which I think is brilliant, is hosting a VIP night where they bring in people to show them the function food, you know. So I guarantee you, you'll get some sales out of it.
Yeah, nice. So how do people connect with you and ask you questions?
By all means, jump onto LinkedIn. I'm sure this will be part of it. Yeah, I'm more than happy to connect.
Put your details in the show notes for sure.
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to connect. And sometimes people just need someone to spitball an idea with, and we're more than happy to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I love helping clients realize their customer engagement objectives. And as I said, doesn't always start with loyalty. Sometimes it just starts with getting a second date.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got some ways that we can help you.
Think about it, yeah. And it's what, impactdata.com.au?
.au, that's us. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can reach out to us there. And we've got some great content that might be helpful, might, you know, generate some ideas. My favourite one is The Anatomy of a Successful Customer Journey. So you can jump on and grab that, and that might give you some
Your blog's very good. The blog is terrific. I watch that.
Thank you. Well, that is high praise from you, Ken, because absolutely devour your content every week as well.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app, and look for the link at the top of the HospoReset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.